This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The news from OPEC, Vienna, the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and its Russia-led allies, agreed to slash 2 million barrels of oil a day, according to delegates, in a move likely to push up already high global energy prices and help oil-exporting Russia pay for its war in Ukraine. I welcome Simon Constable, writing at Barron's and the Wall Street Journal and other distinguished publications. And I call upon Simon to comment on how he has written in the past several months that the energy play is always going to be positive given the uncertainty of the war in Ukraine, certainly the cutoff of natural gas to Europe, and now the question of oil exports from Russia. However, what I do not recall is anyone in the caverns of Wall Street believing that OPEC and Russia would be working together to reduce the amount of oil available, necessarily leading to higher prices. Simon, a very good day to you. Your recommendation, Thanksgiving of 21, recommendation analysis for Barron's, as I recall, was for two unhedged oil companies. That would be Occidental Petroleum and Conoco, both doing very well, Simon, I report to you, up more than 100% and going to return to their paramount condition with the cut. However, right now, do I remember correctly that this is a bigger reduction in production that anyone was talking about and that this is a surprise? Good evening to you, Simon.
Good evening to you, John. Yes, absolutely. You are correct. This is a surprise. I don't think many, if anyone, saw this coming. It seems counterintuitive. Many of those oil-producing nations that we're talking about, with the exception of Russia, many of those nations are closely allied with the West. So you think about Saudi Arabia, that's a very important oil producer after the U.S., and it's considered to be, you know, a very close ally to the U.S., to Western Europe. And yet it's like, well, okay, prices have come down, so we'll have everybody take a little off the global market. And that has sent the price of Brent crude up. It's jumped up quite considerably, and that will help Russia. And this is very different from a scenario I was talking about a few weeks ago with you. So this scenario really stops oil hitting the global market. What the sanctions were doing was they were stopping maybe Russia getting a decent price for it, but we knew that the whole oil market, somehow the oil would leak out of Russia, maybe through China, maybe through India, maybe through other places, and eventually that would bring prices down, which it did. And obviously OPEC didn't like that, and have jumped it back up again. I think if it goes, you know, more than $100 a barrel for Brent crude, then we probably have OPEC getting some flack from Joe Biden in the White House and other, you know, other major economy leaders ringing up OPEC and saying, look, you know, this cannot hold, because that will really be awful for many, many people across the world.
The reason the price came down in oil and in natural gas is the anticipation of the recession here in the United States. And I'm presuming that's the same in Europe with you. Simon's in France, so he sees this from the point of view of not only the European Union, a French member, but also NATO, a French member. And the recession anticipated is dropping demand. So you believe that this cut is in response to the anticipation of the recession. They must have imagined the price was going to go even lower.
Well, maybe they did envisage that. I think it's a combination of two things. One is expectations of certainly a slowdown in economic activity and perhaps a recession. But also what I was saying before is that, you know, if Russia is producing oil, even if the West is not buying that oil, that does not mean that oil will not hit the global market and affect prices, but it does so slowly. So I think those two things together really, really matters. And, you know, no one wants to, you know, have the producer not get a thwack of money for their production of oil. But likewise, you don't want the customer to be, you know, hurt badly. You know, it's a balancing act, which is in the past we'd said between $70 and $80 a barrel would be something of a sweet spot. We're obviously above that now. Maybe this is the new sweet spot, which is between, you know, $80 and $100 a barrel would make, you know, or leave most people happy. But it seems awfully like we're in the nosebleed levels.
And Simon, can you translate your prices in France, what you're paying for petrol now? We used to watch you in Edinburgh. Have you seen a jump or a decline in prices for gasoline?
Well, it's been the diesel, which is what the car my wife and I have got. It's slightly cheaper here. I think there's the fewer taxes. There are more paid toll roads here in this country than there are in Britain, but generally a little bit low. And we saw them falling in the few weeks we've been here. We've seen the prices falling week by week. Obviously now they'll be going back up again, right. Which will be interesting. And the other thing we do notice is that frequently diesel fuel is out of stock at the filling stations. They're just, you know, it's just not there. So, and I think that's probably because it's a very rural area and you have a lot of people needing diesel for their tractor or for their farm machinery or for their big trucks.
Now, that also speaks to a question of refining capacity worldwide and refining oil coming out of Russia as well. So all of these things will feed together. You have an article, Simon, taking us to where we are right now, waiting for the Federal Reserve to make another decision about the inflation that's worldwide. And your article reminds us that the Federal Reserve of today is not typical of what we remember in the 20th century during the high inflation period in the 1980s when Paul Volcker was chairman, and during the bull market period of the 90s, early 2000s, when Mr. Greenspan was the Federal Reserve chairman. Then it was, as you report, we followed their direction because they were geniuses. They knew what they were talking about. Now we have a committee. Is that successful, Simon, in your measure, a committee of federal bankers?
You know, I don't think it is successful. I think the Fed has lost some of its credibility. I mean, the quote that I was given was, if you believe you have someone brilliant in charge, then you have confidence. And with Volcker, we certainly believed we had someone brilliant in charge. And the same with Greenspan. They were incomprehensible. In many ways, particularly Greenspan, you couldn't really understand what he was saying half the time. It was mostly gobbledygook. I think that was deliberate. There was little transparency about how the decisions were made. They weren't measured and they weren't signaled. They were done on an instant, almost like you had a swordsman making a jab at the right moment. And the right moment was purely at the discretion of that central banker. It wasn't Volcker and his committee. It wasn't the Federal Reserve. It was Mr. Volcker was doing it. And then Mr. Greenspan was doing it. And everybody else was really a supporting player. In a very modest way. That worked. People liked that. People had confidence in the Fed when that was happening. Now they don't. There's a lot of second guessing of the Federal Reserve. They've moved very slowly, as you would expect for an institution that makes decisions by committee. And as I once remember being in Merrill Lynch, if you remember Merrill Lynch, the big brokerage company, went in there one day and there was a big sign on a door of a committee room. And on the outside, it says, committees are the worst way to make decisions. And indeed, I think they are. And this wasn't very good. So there's another thing that's really quite bad with with what's happening with the Fed. It's got mission creep. I used to be just looking at keeping inflation low and, you know, looking at employment and hope, you know, trying to maintain decent levels of employment. Now it has all sorts of other things that it wants to do. And that dilutes what it is trying to do. I mean, the old thing I learned at my economics classes as an undergrad was you need one policy tool per goal. And if the goal is inflation, you have your one policy tool. Having more than one or two for a policy tool is too much.
And it isn't just the Federal Reserve. It's also the European Central Bank is a committee.
Yes.
And it's making decisions slowly. And both ECB and the Fed have responded sluggishly to conditions that now prey upon us, which is worldwide inflation. They couldn't have anticipated Ukraine, but they certainly could have anticipated with that supply chain was not going to lift and that the amount of money coming into our hands was going to lead to inflation. And we will fault them for that forever, Simon. Simon.
Oh yes, we will. And indeed, I dubbed the Fed as sloth-like, and the other central banks were even slower. So that tells you how what I really think of them all, and that their speed has not been good.
And right now, Simon, just last 30 seconds, do you see the inflation in Occitane, France, in the south of France that you saw in Edinburgh?
No, not really. Nothing like. I mean, this is an agricultural area. There is a lot of good food and produce available, and it seems to be pretty measured at the moment. And I think France has a reasonable level of inflation for, you know, given the situation with the energy supplies. I'm going to be very interested to see how it goes this winter, but it's relatively modest compared to the UK.
Simon Constable of Barron's and other distinguished publications. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.